We're in James chapter 2, still. We looked at the thesis the last two Sundays. James' thesis is, faith without works is dead. And we introduced that in two Sundays, two questions that he asked. And now we want to look at his illustration. The thesis is illustrated now. After he stated it, he's going to say, this is what it is. And we find this in verses 15 to 17. If a brother or sister is without clothing and is in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace and be warmed and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. We need to see that this passage, three verses, are an illustration. I know I said that. But I want to say it again. They're an illustration. If we had only the book of James, you would not have any exhortation to take care of the poor. Because this is not an exhortation to take care of the poor. It's an illustration of faith without works. I thought, well, is that worth stating? Well, yeah, I think it is. I think we need to see, get away from the idea that James is telling us, take care of the poor. Give them clothes, give them food. Get away from that. In this time, all he's doing is illustrating his point. Don't miss his point with the illustration. When I first started preaching, a lady came to me in the back. I heard D.L. Moody preach. I said, whoa, you heard D.L. Moody? Yes, sir. And young man, you preached the finest sermon I ever heard. Whoa, finer than D.L. Moody? One lady, maybe the same service, but came to me and said, oh, that was such a wonderful message. That illustration of the oak tree, that was so vivid. She had heard the illustration. She hadn't heard the message, maybe. So what I want us to do, don't hear just the illustration. Hear what James is saying about that, what he's using it for. Now, could James have used another illustration? Sure. And sometimes I wish he had. See, you could say, for instance, you have a barn that needs to be painted. You have a barn that it's just awful. No paint on it at all, or scraggly paint. James could have said, if you go and buy some paint and you put it in your storage room and you leave it there, what good is that? Because paint that's not on the barn is useless. That would have been the same thing, wouldn't it? That's exactly what he's saying here. Only he uses something very pertinent to them, and we're going to talk about why he picked this illustration. So we have the picking of the illustration. Why this particular one? Well, first of all, it's an appropriate one. It's an appropriate illustration. If you want to turn back to Acts chapter 11, I'm going to read it, and you can listen if you like. Acts chapter 11, verses 27 to 30. We have something that comes directly from this time when James wrote. And here it is. In fact, verse 26, he said, they were first called Christians at Antioch. Then he says, verse 27, now in those days there came down prophets from Jerusalem to Antioch, and there stood up one of them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there should be a great famine all over the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius. And the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren who dwelt in Judea, which also they did, sending it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Now, Josephus, the Jewish historian, tells us that that happened in A.D. 46, the same time when James was writing this book. So he uses this illustration because it's very appropriate to them. It's a part of their experience. And people are in need in this famine, and he's saying, let me tell you about it. Let me give this illustration right out of their own experience. So it's an appropriate illustration. It's also a repetitive theme in this book. In verse 127, he has said, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and keep yourself unspotted from the world. So he's said that already. He's also said in 2:2, if there come one into your synagogue, a man with a gold ring, fine clothing, and there come in a poor man also in vile clothing, and you have regard to him that wears the fine clothing, see, So it's easy to see at the time. Then in verse 15, right here in this passage, he's saying the same thing. If you have a man who is naked, hungry, or whatever. So it was a convenient illustration. They would know it. It was something they would point out. It would also touch a chord in their heart, something emotional. Somebody's poor. Man, I remember I saw one last week. I didn't do something about it. That kind of thing. That's what he's saying. And it was very practical. So it's appropriate. It's repetitive. But it's also representative. It's a representative illustration. It's a necessary work. We ought to do that, because not only do we have it here, we have it elsewhere in Scripture. And James has told us already in 2:2. Others have. Jesus himself told us about the taking care of the poor. So it's a necessary work. But it's only one of many possible works, see? If you talk about spiritual gifts, this would be the gift of helps, see? So it's one of many possible ones. Witnessing, teaching, discipling, giving, on and on of things that we should do, works that our faith should bring us to. But it's not the only work. If we have opportunity, we ought to help people who are poor and naked. But that's not all we do. And if that's all we do, we haven't done enough. See? So don't get the idea, James is saying, that if you have faith and you help the poor, then everything's okay. Not saying that at all. He's saying that's one of the things. It's only an illustration. It's also diagnostic. That is, he's saying, look at yourself. If you don't do this, then you have profited that man nothing. And he's going to say later on, just so, faith, if it doesn't have works, does not profit anything. See? Then we come from the picking of the illustration to the presentation of the illustration. He's going to tell them what it's all about. It concerns a fellow believer. He says, if a brother or a sister, and we've talked about this before, but I want to hammer it home again. If it's a brother or a sister, that means that you are a brother or a sister. He's assuming that. See? So, the you there, the you is in verse 16 twice, and one of you, plural, says to them, and yet you do not give them. The you there is a believer. He's assuming that. So, he says then, it concerns a fellow believer. He has physical needs in the illustration, and they are life-threatening needs, see? He needs clothes, see? Now, I don't think he's completely naked, but he needs clothes. I had thought about the outline. His clothes are threadbare and his cupboard is bare. But that's what he's saying here. His clothes are threadbare. The elements will eventually result in his death if he doesn't have some clothes put on. And it gets cold there in Jerusalem. And he needs food. His hunger will eventually result in his death if somebody doesn't help him. And you ought to do that. But then, he says, you say something. What do you say? Well, you say, go away. What? Yeah, go away. That's what that word is. It's not just go. I thought about three good words for go just a while ago. Good words for go. This is go away. Go away. Be on your way. Because the presence of a needy person is convicting. Go away. Get out of my sight. You know, when the king comes in some places, when the king comes, get all the poor people out of there. Get on a back street somewhere. We don't want the king to see anything bad. Well, we're like that to ourselves. We don't want to see bad. So get out of the way. Go away. And I think they might have said it just that way if they spoke it in English. Go away. Get out of my face and eyes. Don't put water on my windshield and then smear it around and think you've done something. Want me to give you a dollar. Whatever. But go away is the first thing. Then the second thing he says is, be warmed. What? Yeah, you have clothes on? Well, just be warmed, brother. I knew something about this. Experience, not too much. But I lived in the Depression. I was born before the Depression. My sister was born in 1929, in October. I told my remaining brother just the other day, said, I think that she caused it. But we lived in that Depression, and we lived alongside of a railroad for a lot of those years, and people would, you know, hitchhike on the train. They'd get off the train when the train stopped in front of our place, and they'd jump off the train and look around, ooh, there's a house. And so they'd come up and knock on the door, ma'am, do you have any food? Mom always gave them something. We didn't have a lot of food. She always gave them something. And I remember one man one time came in, and after she gave him the food, he sat down out in the yard and ate it and says, do you have a washboard? She said, well, you could do some work. No, you have a washboard? Yeah, and brought the washboard, and he pulled a thimble out of his pocket. Had a kazoo. You know, a kazoo is you hum into it. You don't have to know anything, just hum into it. He put it in his mouth, and he got the board, put one leg under there, and he got that thimble, and he played Amazing Grace. No, it was when the saints go marching in. You religious folks, I'm going to play you a religious song, you know, when the saints go marching in. That was a man who was in need of something. Mother had very little thing to do, but she gave him something. I saw this in action, see. She didn't say, well, go and be filled, go be warmed. You know? Be filled. We don't have anything for you, but if you just go away on your way, whistle and sing, you'll probably feel good. You'll still be hungry. But then he says, you say this, but you do nothing. Do nothing. I read a poem. Let me read it to you. I was hungry, and you formed a humanitarian club and discussed my hunger. I was imprisoned, and you crept off quietly to your chapel in the cellar and prayed for my release. I was naked, and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt and thanked God for your help. I was homeless, and you preached to me the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I was lonely, and you left me alone so that you could pray for me. You seem so holy and so close to God, but I'm still very hungry and very lonely and very cold. That's what he's talking about. Now, we've had the presentation of the illustration. Now, what's the point? What's the point of his illustration here? Well, what he's saying is, it's a just as and just so. Just as saying and not doing is dead as far as that man is concerned, just so faith without works is dead as far as your Christian life is concerned. Right. So he's not talking here about the unbeliever's faith for salvation. He's talking about the believer's faith for service. And that faith is dead as far as anybody's health is concerned. Now, how do you explain that? Well, the explanation of the faith is this. Look at what he does not say. He does not say that the faith doesn't exist. That's the favorite interpretation of this passage. Oh, you don't have any faith. No, he doesn't say that. He says, you have faith. See? He does not say that faith does not exist. He doesn't say that the man never had any faith. He doesn't say you don't have any faith. He says, your faith is dead. Right. He does not say that he does not now have faith. See? You can't have dead faith and not have any faith. You got faith. Right. And he doesn't say, and listen to this one, he doesn't say that the man is dead. Boy, that's a favorite implication from this passage. You're dead. No. Your faith is dead. It says nothing about whether you're dead or not. See, your faith is dead. That's what he doesn't say. Now, what does he say? He says, you have faith. His criticism is that faith is not doing anything. Right. And since that faith didn't do anything, it's dead. It's useless is another way to say that. In fact, he uses useless in place of dead one time here, a little later on. Now, that brings us to this question. What does he mean by dead? He says your faith is dead. What does he mean by dead? Why does he use the word dead to describe a faith that's not working? Well, it's metaphorical. Nicole, a really fine writer, says this. I don't agree with everything he says, but I agree with this. He says, did, not as to quality, but as to effect. It just doesn't do anything. So, did does not mean that it doesn't exist. And I'll tell you why. Because it's metaphorical. He's using it as an illustration. It's an illustration. You have to see that. It's an illustration. Now, how can you use the word did metaphorically? Well, every language does that. We do it in English. You ever hear of somebody who was dead wrong? Still living, moving around, but he's dead wrong. You know? Well, how about we have a dead letter office? The letters don't exist? Well, maybe eventually they won't, but when you talk about the dead letter office, you're talking about letters that nobody's going to read. They're useless because nobody can read them. Nobody knows where they're supposed to go. So they're dead letter office. They're dead letters. They're hearing about somebody who is dead drunk. Dead drunk. It doesn't say he doesn't exist. He's just dead drunk. You know, he's there. You see him. Or somebody's a dead duck. That was a good one. That's a double metaphor. Dead duck. Now, it doesn't mean he's dead. It doesn't mean he's a duck. It's a metaphor. Now, my favorite. Sometimes I go out in my car, and the thing I hate the most is I step on that car, and it goes, what's wrong? I've got a dead battery. Open the hood, look in there. There's no battery. Of course there's a battery. It's just dead. See? What does it need? It needs a shot. It needs a shot of power. Very often, I start it up and get it going. Somebody puts a charge to it or whatever. It needs a shot of power. Let me tell you something, folks. If your faith doesn't work, it needs a shot of power. That's what he's saying. See? It's dead. Now, not just in our own parlance, but also in the Bible, we find the word dead. Just Romans. We'll just use Romans. 4:19. Abraham's body was dead. Dead? He had a child after that. He lived another 20, 30 years. You know? His body was dead. Well, it wasn't really dead. But the Bible says it was dead. It wasn't dead. You know? Sarah's womb was dead. Still had a child after that. Apart from sin, the law is dead. 7:8. Sin, apart from the law, is dead. Now, sin still works, but sin is dead in some sense. Paul said in 7:9, I am dead. Sin revived and I died. 8:10, he says the believer's body is dead. So, dead is used in a metaphorical sense many places. You can find it also in Luke 15, Hebrews 6, Hebrews 9, Revelation 3:1. It's all over the place. Using the word dead in a metaphorical sense. So also in James. James is dealing with life and death issues. See? In 1:21, he says, receive the implanted word which is able to save your life from physical death. Faith without works cannot save a soul from physical death, he says. It's dead, useless. And then here, can faith save your brother from physical death, lacking the necessities of life? He's saying, this man is naked, this man is hungry. And if you don't help him, then your faith doesn't do him a bit of good. Brother, I have faith. And I don't want you to become a rice Christian. You know what a rice Christian is? In China, they were giving out rice. They were coming to the services and they'd give them rice to take home. And they were rice Christians. They weren't doing anything. And they had to watch that. And you have to be careful in any kind of giving out people. They become attracted to you only because of what you're giving them physically. They don't hear the spiritual message. Well, he says, can your faith save your brother from physical death? Lacking the necessities of life? No, your faith is dead. Your faith is useless as far as that man is concerned. Note this. Once we get past the idea that death has to mean death in hellfire, and we tune into the context of James, it all makes sense. That the faith without works is dead, and that faith doesn't mean that that man is a believer or an unbeliever. In fact, a man who does not work can be either a believer or an unbeliever. I don't know. Or, a person who works can be either a believer or an unbeliever. I don't know from that. How do I know whether I am a believer? Word says so. If I believe on Jesus Christ, I have eternal life. If I never do a work, but the only way I'm going to know whether you are a believer or not is what I see. So I have good evidence when you work. I have good evidence that you are a believer. So faith without works is dead. All kinds of work. The work that we need to have done here in this church and around you, wherever you go, the witnessing and the working. I was thinking this morning, I used to teach Sunday school class Sunday morning. I used to get the bulletin ready, pick the hymns. I used to go get Marie. You know what? I didn't do any of that this morning because faith is working in a lot of people. And we need to have it multiplied. May your faith be legionary. May there be legions of us doing works along with our faith.